Welcome to the TaxCast, 15 minutes of eye-opening global news and analysis on tax havens and corruption services from the Tax Justice Network, with me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. First, the TaxCast news headlines for this month. This month, US presidential candidate Mitt Romney, the dream ticket for the tax haven world, managed to insult 47% of his electorate, accusing them of not paying their taxes. By the way, none of his figures stack up. Now he's finally released his 2011 tax return, on a Friday, to limit publicity perhaps. According to Citizens for Tax Justice, the poorest fifth of the population paid an effective tax rate of 17% last year. The second poorest fifth paid 21%. Romney paid 14.1%. But then it's not comparing like with like, since he lives off investment income rather than a salary, an example of how the US tax system favours the wealthy. Also in the US, first he did 31 months in prison for assisting tax evasion, now the Internal Revenue Service has paid him a $104 million reward. Former Swiss bank UBS employee and whistleblower Bradley Birkenfeld's insider information on illegal offshore banking produced $5 billion in back taxes for the US government. Corruption expert and writer Jeffrey Robinson.
What this does is send a signal to other Swiss banks, you better clean up your act or somebody inside the bank will be enticed into trying to top the $104 million reward. In other words, Swiss banks, there's a bounty on your head. The most depressing thing about the UBS affair is that with all the fooling around UBS has been doing, the only person who has gone to jail for what UBS has done is the whistleblower. I don't think it's going to change the way banks operate, because the Swiss banks in particular, who depend on selling secrecy, they're going to find ways around it, and they're going to threaten their own people with severe penalties if they violate the secrecy laws. It's a $2 trillion industry, and they're not going to let it go out the door just like that.
Still, many Swiss banks are estimating their clients will shift billions of dollars out of their Swiss accounts, partly because of US actions against them, they say, and partly because of various new tax treaties from other countries, but of differing effectiveness. We'll have more on where the money might go later. And finally, multinational companies like to cut their tax bills by diverting foreign direct investment through obliging third countries with the most favourable tax treaties. This tax avoidance trickery deprives governments of revenue and adds to the pile of idle cash companies are sitting on. According to research by Francis Wasig, in 2009 alone, multinationals held approximately 1,600 billion euros of foreign direct investment via the Netherlands, the world's largest conduit country. And those are the TaxCast news headlines. Now it's time for campaigning accountant Richard Murphy's take on this month. Okay, Richard, let's start with talk about Switzerland possibly losing its tax haven status because of coming under fire by the United States and their actions, new European Union tax treaties, possibly clients withdrawing or about to withdraw millions or billions. Is that actually true? I'm just wondering whether clients aren't just likely to move their cash to, for example, Swiss branches in Singapore.
I think inevitably, there is going to be a significant movement of money out of Switzerland. I think the stories must have some foundation in truth, because Switzerland is now vulnerable to information exchange under the FATCA regulations, in particular with the USA, but frankly to elsewhere as well. And they're also vulnerable to whistleblowers, as we now know too. It's an open secret around the tax haven offshore wealth industry that the money is going to Singapore. Singapore still has draconian tax secrecy measures. Its banking secrecy is virtually impermeable at the moment. And it also has draconian criminal sanctions on bank employees in that country who dare breach that secrecy, and they're willing to enforce it. So fear upholds banking secrecy in Singapore, and that's where the wealth will be taking their money. It's not a chance, of course, that the Swiss banks have all got major operations in Singapore, and although they have agreed under some of their new agreements that they won't help their clients move funds to Singapore, I think the chance that they aren't is remote in the extreme. But this therefore means that the money isn't leaving the tax haven world, it's moving from one tax haven, Switzerland, to another, Singapore. That doesn't mean, however, that the exercise of breaking open secrecy in Switzerland is a waste of time. What we have to do with tax havens is literally expose them, if necessary, one at a time. This is the start of that process. We'll beat all the tax havens in the end, Singapore included.
Okay, let's move on to a general anti-avoidance principle which was tabled in the UK's Parliament this month by MP Michael Meacher, trying to get it to be part of UK law. Give us a summary of what was in the bill.
Well, I know this bill really quite well because I wrote it. The bill simply has one underlying principle, and that is that if somebody tries to undertake a transaction which has its sole or main objective to reduce the tax that they owe, then that transaction is ignored when it comes to calculating their tax bill.
This general anti-avoidance principle is not going to become law, is it?
There's little chance at the moment of this becoming law, but it is quite significant. The government in the UK is putting forward what it is calling a general anti-abuse rule at the moment. Notice they aren't using the word avoidance, they're calling it abuse. And it is very narrow indeed. Only the most artificial abuse will be stopped by the government's proposal. We've pushed the issue fair and square onto the political agenda again and have shown that there is an alternative. This debate will actually run now for some considerable time because the government's proposal won't become law until July next year, with plenty of debating time between now and then for the issue to be discussed again and again.
Okay, very quickly then, Bangladesh is about to, or may already by now have passed, a new VAT law to fulfil IMF conditions, which would extend the VAT tax on essential items, and that would have a disproportionate effect on the poor. Why is VAT tax a regressive tax?
If this law goes through, 37%, that's more than a third of its total tax revenues, will come from value-added tax on the sale of goods and services. If we compare that with somewhere like the UK, which has about 12% of our total taxes from VAT. So you can see how much more important VAT is in Bangladesh than it is in very many developed countries that have similar taxes. And the problem with VAT is very easy to explain. It's a tax on what you buy. Now, the poorest people in any community spend absolutely every penny, cent, whatever currency it is, of income that they have. They therefore will be paying tax, VAT, on everything that they spend. Those who are well off save. And by definition, if you save, you don't spend and therefore you don't pay VAT. So as a proportion of income, VAT always imposes a heavier tax bill on the least well off than it does on the most well off. Now that is inherently unfair. Bangladesh, at the request of the IMF, is actually making its current VAT worse. And as a consequence, is actually going to make its poorest people poorer. And they're already some of the poorest in the world.
But why is the Bangladesh government not raising more tax from other sources, like big businesses, for example?
They can't actually capture corporate profits in Bangladesh because transfer pricing abuse is rampant. The illegal economy is enormous. There is an answer here. There clearly are appropriate wealth taxes, income taxes, corporate taxes, and maybe land value taxes for Bangladesh, which could very clearly address its problems and raise the revenues it needs. But they're not willing to promote those. The IMF is still demanding value-added taxes in the poorest countries in the world when those only make its problems with regard to poverty worse.
Thanks, Richard. Campaigning accountant Richard Murphy of Tax Research UK. He'll be back with his take on tax justice next month. Now for this month's special feature. The TaxCast looks at the neglected role of the so-called Big Four accountancy firms in eroding tax revenue and promoting tax havens. Their trade affects every street, every home, and every citizen.
As the world struggles to deal with an unprecedented financial and economic crisis, the need for responsible business practices has never been greater.
Deloitte is working very closely with our clients and then with all of our people.
We take a complex matter and turn it into simple solutions for our clients.
We need to keep pace, try to be a step ahead. How do we do that? Three words: high performance culture.
They audit multinational companies, banks, even whole economies. Deloitte, Ernst & Young, PricewaterhouseCoopers and KPMG's annual revenue is about $105 billion a year. They're sometimes prosecuted and fined by governments, but like the banks, fines are a bit like parking tickets, just something to be added to business expenses. Prem Sekar is Professor of Accounting at Essex University. He calls the Big Four the Pinstripe Mafia.
Accountants don't pack shotguns and don't shoot people in the knees, but actually what they're doing is creating tax avoidance schemes at an industrial scale. A vast number of circular transactions are created for the sole purpose of avoiding taxes. No other reason. If all they are concerned with is appeasing clients and collecting fees for themselves, that is no different from pimps and drug dealers who can refer to many a satisfied client and very, very high fees. The question we ask them, what are you doing that is socially desirable, socially useful?
Like the mafia, he says, they surround themselves with the garbs of professionalism. They eat in fancy restaurants, drive fancy cars, and they seem to run respectable businesses. But in fact, they're rotten to the core.
Lots of people elect governments through the ballot box because they promise better healthcare, better education, better transport, more security, policing, defence. But along come these accountants and they're saying, very interesting, through the ballot box you made certain choices, but actually we are going to do things which mean your choices can't be delivered. Subverting democracy, who rules? The mafioso or the elected mayors and councillors and governments.
Okay, so they would say that it's legitimate tax efficiency that they are promoting, and surely every company needs good professional expert advice.
As many a court case has shown, something is considered to be tax avoidance until it is challenged. Once it is challenged and it is thrown out, what that meant was that these people sat in these city centre offices discussing how we can rob the public purse, yet give the appearance of being within the law, and it turns out it was actually evasion. But it is very difficult for the authorities to take on all the dubious schemes.
And you know, expensive also.
Absolutely, and that expense falls on the public purse. So at the moment in the UK, the courts are waiting to hear about 21,000 cases. These kind of disputes can last for years. It is extremely rare for the tax authorities to try to recover the costs from accountancy firms. In other words, the taxpayer loses even when the government wins. And then, you know, we have a problem that every year about 30% of the UK finance bill or the budget just deals with the avoidance schemes. So think about the vast public time in analysing and then trying to provide legislation to deal with this.
Imagine also the limitations of developing countries and their resources for prosecuting tax avoidance by multinational companies registered in London or Switzerland. And so this cynical, silent tax war means serious loss of revenue. Yet governments still aren't really tackling the abuses of the Big Four. Why? Well, they're all big political party donors, but there's more.
At one level, the governments made noises about tax avoidance, how they're going to clamp down on this. But at another level, they use the same accountancy firms, for example, to restructure the health service, to privatize state-owned enterprises. And it is interesting, number of people from the Big Four firms directly associated with tax avoidance schemes are now at the Treasury and in other departments. In other words, they have captured the state. So that has resulted in real corruption of the politics and public policy making.
So how do we tackle the Big Four? Here's a few of Professor Seeker's solutions.
The tax returns and related correspondence of all corporations should be publicly available. And the working papers of accountancy firms who are peddling tax avoidance schemes should be automatically available to the tax authorities. Now, at that point, you hear an outcry, oh my God, it is private. Well, it can't be private when what they are doing is affecting the wider public. It is a public decision they made that the total public revenues must be eroded. And that is what the Big Four accountancy firms have done.
You've been listening to the Taxcast. We'll bring you more news and analysis next month.
Thank you.